The Rebel Capitalist Show, episode 278. Welcome to the podcast that helps you build wealth and thrive in a world of out-of-control central banks and big governments. This is the Rebel Capitalist Show. All right, guys, it gives me a great deal of pleasure to welcome someone back to the Rebel Capitalist Show. He is one of my favorites, and I've got to tell you right now, before we even get to the end of this video, if you're not on this gentleman's email list, you are absolutely missing out. I get a lot of emails. These are probably the only ones that I read. He really needs no introduction. He is the sovereign man himself, Simon Black. Simon, welcome to the Rebel Capitalist Show.
Thanks, buddy.
So my first question, I think, is extremely important. It might be a little broad, but I think it's relevant for the times we live in. And that is, what the hell is going on? I mean, more specifically, with these government-enforced mandates, what to be, you know, YouTube-friendly, we'll call them, for this new medicine that we've seen. That was kind of the line in the sand for me. About 6 months or 9 months ago, on my channel and the live streams, I was talking to people about setting up a plan B. And I said, you need to set up a plan B, but you also have to come to a conclusion as to what is the line in the sand for you personally, your family. So it's not an emotional decision. What line will the government cross where you say, you know what? That's too much. It's gone too far. I'm going to go ahead and execute my plan B. Again, it needs to be something that's premeditated, but that was my line in the sand. Once they come out with passports and government issued mandates, but you know, they just blew by that. And now we've seen it in New York, we're seeing it in San Francisco, we're seeing it New Orleans, all across the country. I was planning on going to Dubai before this whole thing, you know, back in 2019. Now Dubai, the UAE, is requiring you know, passports for everything, for live events, for bars, for restaurants. It's just, it's insane. And I know you've got your finger on the pulse. So I'd really like to hear from your standpoint, what's going on.
Yeah. You need a code name for this, right?
Yeah.
So otherwise Google's going to come after you. So I just, you know, we can call it bananas, right?
Yeah. The bananas mandate, right?
Right, exactly. The banana mandate. So, because it's equally absurd when you think about it, like, why would they mandate bananas? That doesn't make any sense, you know? So, look, I mean, even right here, I live in Puerto Rico.
Yeah.
And even here in Puerto Rico now, they've had this this mandate that they recently issued. And it's interesting because a buddy of mine texted me, and you know, he's a leper like I am, and you know, he's like, hey, we should go to lunch. Turns out there's a couple of places where that aren't abiding by this, because they actually wrote this into the executive order. And this is the thing that I think is very interesting, is that if you see, most of these are actually taking place by decree,
right,
and not necessarily by legislation, so they sort of like to show off that they're these, you know, constitutional representative democracies and all these sorts of things. It's like, well, why don't you allow the democratic process then to work in the way that it's supposed to, if you believe in it so strongly? But they don't do that. Instead, they have these, you know, petty tyrants, the, you know, warlords, whatever you want to call them, that issue these decrees from on high and say, this is what you're going to do. Now, at least here in Puerto Rico, and there are other places that I've seen this where they do kind of leave the option open. So in Puerto Rico, they say, if you're not going to do this, then you have, for example, if you're a bar or a restaurant, then you have to reduce to 50% capacity. So there are a couple places in town saying, okay, I'll go down to 50% capacity. And so my friends and I are will be planning to heavily patronize these places, to sort of show, you know, this is to me, true democracy is not a system of government, but it is the market. It's capitalism is true democracy. So let people vote with their dollars and euros and renminbi and so forth, as opposed to letting politicians make decrees, or even, you know, people in legislatures, you know, make the decisions based on what they think is the will of the people. Capitalism expresses the true will of the people, where, you know, as the old expression, you put your money where your mouth is, because if you're not willing to do that, then you obviously don't really stand for it very much. And I've talked about this a lot. I mean, you know, people sort of roll their eyes at, you know, different things, you know, for example, the wokeness of so many of the big corporations, how they've all bowed and bent the knee. I thought that, for example, a couple months back where they saw that actor John Cena groveling in Mandarin because he mentioned Taiwan as a separate country, and he's just groveling in this pathetic apology, you know, and people have a problem with that and say, okay, well, yeah, but did you go see the movie? You know, did you go with this, like, with Fast and Furious 18 or whatever they're on? Like, did you go stand in line and see the movie? Did you go pay money to these guys? Because, you know, if you weren't willing to withhold, you know, $10 or $5 or whatever it is to rent the thing on Disney, whatever, you know, if you weren't willing to even do that, to go without seeing the John Cena movie, then what do you really stand for? How strong really do you really have the right to complain if you're not even willing to not go see, you know, Fast and Furious 27? Because, you know, and I'm not, you know, like, maybe you don't care about it. Maybe somebody doesn't care about, okay, John Cena is just trying to cover his ass, whatever. But all these different things that we see, these ultra woke, you know, you're not yet. It's like Major League Baseball trying to get into politics, whatever. And so somebody has a problem with that and they want to complain about it, but they're still going to watch the, you know, they're still going to watch the games and all these sorts of things. But there's so many things that you can do as an individual. And if you're not willing to do some of these basic things, some of which don't even cost you anything, some of which might, sometimes it might mean patronizing certain establishments or not patronizing other establishments. But if you're not even willing to do that, I would encourage you to sort of step back and take a look at the mirror and say, who am I really? What kind of human being, you know, for me as a man to not have enough moral principle, to not have enough moral character, to not watch a movie with John Cena, and I can't even do that. What does that say about me,
right,
as a man? Right. So that's kind of my thing is always, you know, it's that old Michael Jackson song, you know, the man in the mirror. And you know, it's just really kind of taking a look at yourself and seeing, like, because I think there honestly, there's always sort of plenty of solutions and there's plenty of options out there. But it's if you're somebody that all you're going to do is just bitch and complain and go on Twitter and go, you know, and call somebody else a Nazi and all that sort of stuff, you're just throwing gasoline on the problem. You're not really doing anything. You're just complaining. But actually taking real action, starting with some of the most basic stuff, which might even just mean, you know, like CNN, I look at CNN, I think is a horrible cancer on society. Honestly, I'm it's appalling to me how these people can expect to be taken seriously. You know, when they had like election night, they have people that are supposed to be professional journalists weeping on live television because their guy won, and that they expect to be taken seriously as objective professional journalists. It's a joke. And so to me, I think this is just so cancerous, and I deal with it by just not ever watching it. There is no TV. Like, I walk into the gym and if I see CNN on, I ask the attendant, say, hey, can you turn this off?
Yeah.
Like, what do you want to watch? I don't care.
In another area.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. TV guide doesn't matter to me, or just turn it off. Just turn it off. You know, it's just basic things like that, that's honestly, it's not like it's some big stand. That's just capitalism. It's just basic capitalism.
And free market capitalism. That's right, exactly. What I always say. I want to say, because people see capitalism and they think of the GFC, say, oh, it didn't work during the GFC. And that's why whenever I use the word capitalism, I always like to preface with free market capitalism. That's what's important. Free market, not just.
Right. We're not capitalism. Talking about Pelosi capitalism. We're talking about market capitalism. Yeah, those are two different things. Those are two different things. AOC capitalism, you know?
Yeah.
That's not what we're talking about here.
I want to be clear for the viewer or the listener that the reason I oppose these banana mandates, we'll call them, mm-hmm. issued by the government, it is because they're obviously not about health. That's why I oppose them. You know, people say, oh, aren't you, you know, worried about hospital capacity and this and that? Yeah, sure, I am. But I'm more worried about the lack of freedom. And when you actually look at the facts, you can tell it's just blatantly obvious that this has nothing to do with health. It has everything to do with restricting your freedom and micromanaging your life. And I know you're just an incredible student of history. So I want to read something to you very quickly and get your thoughts on this. And then maybe we can kind of elaborate. And this is something that was tweeted to me today. And I guess it was a quote from some Hungarian Jews for this specific documentary, I'm assuming, about Nazi Germany. They said, during the last days, people wonder, how is it that we didn't do something? Why didn't we run away? Why didn't we hide? Well, things didn't happen all at once. Things happened very slowly. So each time a new law came out or a new restriction, we said, well, just another thing, it will blow over. When we had to wear the yellow star to be outside, then we started to worry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, you know, it's exactly what you were saying earlier about a plan B is you have to have essentially a pre-made decision about at what point are you actually going to execute. There's a line in the sand. And I think the same thing with this, this isn't really a plan B issue so much as just a social issue. Is there a line in the sand? I mean, you could make that argument. A lot of things that have happened over human history, some really terrible things, most of which didn't happen overnight.
Right.
Right. And it's always this sort of series of unfolding events. I mean, you could go back to World War One, for example, in before the outbreak of the Great War. It wasn't like this just happened overnight. They went and shot a guy and all of a sudden everybody went to war. This is a terrible, terrible disaster that unfolded over years and years. And there were so many things along the way that somebody could have said, no, you know what? I see where this is going. It's obvious. We need to put some guardrails on here and make sure this doesn't happen. And yet it didn't happen. And the lead up to World War II, they thought diplomacy would prevail and this policy of appeasement and everything. You know, with Hitler, it wasn't even just the Jews. It was the rest of the world that just sort of sat back and watched it happen slowly, gradually. We'll give them Czechoslovakia. We'll give them, we'll give them Austria. It's sort of their cultural heritage, all this stuff. And everybody just sort of sat back idly and watched it happen. But I think at a certain point, to quote the great Jean-Luc Picard, the line must be drawn here, this far, no farther. And at a certain point, somebody's got to say, where else does this go? Because if we let them do this, then what else are we going to allow them to do? In the name of something that sounds really great and noble, what else are they going to make us do? So in the name of climate change, now all of a sudden they're going to outlaw beef because cows fart too much and pollute the environment. And so now nobody can eat beef. And there are probably a lot of people who might be watching this at a certain point, possibly not your normal audience, but people that might happen to stumble upon this and go, hey, yeah, that sounds great. We should do that. Well, then you do that. You do that. If that's what you want to do, that's great. You know, but we live in a world where a small minority of people, believes that they have the right to tell everybody else, not even necessarily what they can and cannot do, but the very basics of how you're allowed to live your life, including what you not only can't put in your body, which used to be little things like they'd say, you're not allowed to consume, stevia because it's not FDA approved. Boy, do we long for those days, because now it's what you have to put in your body. You know, it's things like how you're allowed to raise your kids and the things that your children what your children have to put in their bodies, what your children are taught in schools. 2 + 2 = 4 is this controversial assertion now that
men can't get pregnant.
Right. Yeah, exactly. All these things that, now that they're filling the, kids' heads with, they're telling kids, that anybody that expresses intellectual dissent is an enemy and all these things, they're telling people, one of the creepiest things ever was, they had these big conferences. You have like these public health administrators, guys like Fauci, in these monitors sort of lording over and above everybody, telling them, telling young people how they should have sex with one another. It was just the creepiest thing.
Did you see that in Australia? They came out with those quote suggestions where they've got actual posters of people, getting intimate, let's say, and they're wearing masks with right. one another. I don't know if you
right,
saw
exactly.
that.
Right, exactly. Wear a mask. Wear a mask. Don't make eye contact. Turn around. Don't face each other. Got to do it in this style, in this way, so that you don't spread COVID. Telling people now, they're saying they have the chief health minister, this lady saying that before you open the front door and step outside, ask yourself, do I really need to go outside? Going outside now is apparently this huge thing. Just to step outside of your door to get some fresh air is this big deal that they want you to, you have to think twice about it because, for the good of society. Now they even starting to say, before you order something online, if you do any online shopping, you should think twice before you engage in any online shopping, because now online shopping puts everybody at risk. And it's just like, what else are we supposed to do except sit at home, cower in fear, you know, turn on the constant fear media that has the real-time ticker of how many people, you know, are getting bananas and how many people are not getting bananas and all these things. It's just a ridiculous thing. And yeah, I mean, it's the world that we live in, but I think at a certain point, yeah, I think a rational person's got to think, well, how far does this go? And if we let them do this, then what else are they going to do? And that's been a very common theme throughout all of history, that they do this and then they do this and they do this and they just keep on going because nobody's ever, you know, stepped up to stop them.
Yeah. That's the important takeaway there, you know, because people sit there and they say, well, what's the big deal? You know, why not just wear a mask? What's the big deal? Why not just lock yourself in your house? What's the big deal? Why not just wear 5 masks? What's the big deal? Why not just get the bananas shot? You know, but see, they just keep going and going and going and going. And that's what people just don't understand. They see it, the world we live in today, as just a snapshot, but it's really a video. And it's a 10-minute video and we're only in minute 1. Right now. Yeah. And that's what it's for whatever reason, they just have a very hard time getting their mind around that. Where do you think this is going? Whomever is, or whatever entity or group, you know, the global elite, the World Economic Forum, the IMF, whatever, whomever is, you know, really, really pushing this, what do you think their objective is? What is their end game?
See, I don't believe in this, in the mustache twirling, you know, man behind the curtain. I don't really ever believe in that. I think, and I never have, simply because I think, you know, I think a lot of people make a big deal about stuff like, you know, the Bilderberg and, you know, WEF and all these things. And, you know, because a bunch of, you know, wealthy, powerful people get together. The reality for me is I think all these different companies and elite, whatever, they all have, frankly, different incentives. I think they have different priorities. I think Google's priorities are different than ExxonMobil's, for example. And so there's not necessarily a whole lot of overlap there. So I don't believe in the cabal. I don't know that there's this backroom organization that's sort of pulling the strings and making this happen. What I do believe is that people, whether individuals, institutions, entities, are opportunistic. And I think everybody has their individual incentives and things that they're, you know, that they're really looking out for, and they see targets of opportunity and they jump all over and they capitalize on it. And I think that's really what we're seeing now. I think one of the most powerful trends that's unfolding here is fear, is really what it is. It's fear for people to speak out, to the point that, you know, we have to sit here and say bananas, you know, for fear of being canceled on YouTube. I already was, we had, you know, I started doing, podcasts again after like a 5-year hiatus.
By the way, I noticed that congratulations on the birth of your daughter, by the way.
Oh yeah. Thanks very much. That was the first one was talking about it. We did like 4 of them.
Yeah. I noticed, and all of a sudden kind of coincided.
All of a sudden we got, yeah. Like, Victoria told me she logged in one day and YouTube had suspended our account. That it was like, okay, well, shame on me. You know, I guess I should have known better. So we stopped doing the videos, and just kind of, we've been doing audio. But anyways, I think it's fear is really the biggest trend here. It's because there's so many people that are afraid to speak out, because now it's like there's these, it's like the Vichy regime. All of a sudden these Nazi collaborators, in a way, and I hate even using that as a historical analogy, because anytime you start saying Germany and World War II and Nazis, and people go, oh, this is just too sensational, whatever. And everybody sort of likes to, you know, I mean, it's almost sort of commonplace. Everybody just calls each other Nazis on Twitter all the time. If you just disagree with what somebody has to say, they're a Nazi.
Yeah.
Most people actually understand absolutely nothing about National Socialism. But what I'm bringing up in particular is how you have people that were one day French patriots, and the next day, you know, they were collaborating with the Germans, basically. And it became this thing where all of a sudden, over time, and in many respects, quite quickly, things that you believed yesterday, you were adamantly opposed to, the next day. And now you've got people that are, whether they are medical professionals that are terrified to speak out, they don't even want to say anything positive about something like ivermectin, which there is, just an abundance of randomized control trials, peer reviewed, leading experts, that have published, meta-analyses and so forth, showing some really incredible benefits for treatment, but they're not allowed to do anything or say anything, because if they align themselves with that, then that now becomes a political statement. And science over the last 18 months seems to have divorced itself from objectivity and has just become another political institution, where the things that we say, the data now is no longer objective, and our conclusions must be subjective. So that we align ourselves in one way, shape, or form. You've got psychologists standing up and talking about whiteness as a disease, as a malignancy, and biologists, who are talking about, whether or not men can get pregnant and chest feeding instead of breastfeeding and all these different things, this is what science has become. And there are so many people that are like, this is absurd, but they're terrified to speak out, because if they do, they fear that they will be canceled and everything that they've worked for their entire lives, will be another. They lose their livelihoods. They might lose their homes, their jobs, all these things. And so they're terrified to speak out. People that have data, for example, that might run counter to the official narrative about bananas, they're terrified to present this data because they're afraid to be canceled. People that have data about, let's say natural banana tolerance, they're terrified to present this data because it goes, opposed to the prevailing narrative, all these different things that people are terrified to speak out, present literally just basic facts, scientific data. This to me is actually the major issue, because if you can't have a rational conversation underpinned by fact, underpinned by truth, really, you deserve what you're going to get. And it's not going to be a pleasant outcome when you cannot have, big decisions, whether it's public health policy, financial decisions, really anything, politics, military engagement, all these things should be made by facts. And when the facts, the real data, let's be honest, you look at the data that's been published, by the CDC and the FDA, just even the sort of just the counts, the basic counts, where all of a sudden, anybody that walks into the hospital with a positive case and ends up dying, whether it's from a gunshot wound, motorcycle accident, they're in the body count now, right? Even though it's completely absurd. You look at that and you go, how can you actually have a credible argument and make credible decisions about public health policy when this is this polluted pool of data that you're drawing from with which to make those decisions? And I think that when you've got bad data, you've got bad information, you're going to make bad decisions. We've seen this, the president of the United States, for example, now claims that he had really bad information, which led him to this appalling, shameful, result in Afghanistan. It's sort of this is the net effect when you're dealing with really terrible information. And I think when you've got the information that's out there and people are terrified to even mention anything, terrified to speak the truth, you're just going to end up with a really, really terrible outcome. And that's the thing that honestly concerns me the most.
How can that be so pervasive? Or maybe if that's not pervasive, as far as the fear of censorship and being deplatformed and losing your job and your livelihood, maybe if that's not universal throughout the world, at least the banana mandates seem to be going that direction. And that's what it's very difficult for me to get my head around. How we could see this in one country. You get a person in charge that's crazy, or you get just a political environment, you get this tribalism that's run amok. But how can we see it just almost in every single country across the globe? Have you given that any thought?
Yeah, because I think that people in power, because we're not talking about necessarily individuals on the ground who are just trying to live their lives. We can see this with these massive protests, these anti-banana mandate protests all over the world.
Right.
So it's not like somebody can credibly say this is the will of the people. you know, they have the, I remember they run these polls and they say X percent of people, you know, want banana mandates. So they say, oh, and of course, this is stuff that is run all over the media. Say, oh, the polls, oh, the pollsters said this, the polls, because the pollsters have never been wrong about anything ever. The pollsters are always right. So they sort of say this like it's gospel truth, as if time and time and time again, the pollsters haven't been embarrassing, just humiliated in their wrongness. Right. And then you go out and you see just absurd amounts of people going and marching in the streets against banana mandates. And you go, does anybody take these polls seriously? Right. But the commonality in all this, when you say, oh, it's all over the world. But what do we have all over the world? We have people in power. We have people in government. And I think that you talk about tribalism. That's the ultimate sort of tribalism. It's just the basic, most carnal instinct of government is self-preservation. And when they have, when they're in a position of power to be able to, and it's all this sort of monkey see, monkey do stuff. It was the same thing with the lockdowns, right? You know, the Chinese lockdown, and people are like, well, that seems weird. They're welding people into their houses, but that's China. And then what happened? They did it in Italy, right? And, you know, little by little, it started to sort of trickle around the world. And, you know, it was in New York City. And once it's New York City, it's like, well, it spread rapidly all over the United States. And suddenly you had, you know, even in Texas and all these places that people were, you know, telling people shelter in place and, you know, wear your masks and all these different things, that they were making these decisions without any real data, without, you know, thinking it through, because self-preservation is in their instinct. And they know that strength in numbers. And if everybody else is doing it, then it makes it easier for me to do it, even if it's a colossal mistake.
Right.
Because if everybody else is making the mistake, then hey, we can point the finger at everybody else. Like, I was just doing what everybody else was doing.
Yeah,
courage,
right.
Courage in government is a very rare commodity. It is unicorn level rarity. You just don't find it. You will not find hardly anybody with a backbone that's going to stand up and say, no, nope, we're not going to do this. This doesn't make any sense. Very, very, very few cases do we see anybody with any actual backbone, because it's just easier to follow the crowd. And this is the thing. You start seeing it in one place and a couple other places do it. And then all these governments do the same thing because everybody else is doing it. That's the reason. It's not rocket science. It's not even a complicated thing. It's just basic human weakness that's built by self-preservation of people in power that want to stay in power. And they feel that the best way to stay in power is to do things that are not controversial, do things that they can cloak themselves in numerical superiority because everybody else is doing it, even though it's not necessarily what people want.
This podcast is brought to you by Rebel Capitalist Pro, the best online investing research. I have teamed up with Chris McIntosh and Lynn Alden, two of the best in the business, to create Rebel Capitalist Pro and give you the tools you need to build wealth and thrive in this crazy world of economic insanity. Rebel Capitalist Pro is jam-packed with Chris and Lynn's incredible research. We have live stream Q&As where you can ask your questions directly to Chris, Lynn, and myself. And the best of all, there's an online member forum which allows you to network, learn, and explore ideas with like-minded individuals. What are you waiting for? Check out Rebel Capitalist Pro right now at georgegammon.com/pro. That's georgegammon.com/pro. Take action today and do something your future self will thank you for.
You know what that reminds me of is all the analysts during the GFC or prior to the GFC. You know, we say, how on earth could they not just wave the red flag here and say, hey, we've got a big problem. But if you think about how they're incentivized to keep their job,
right?
You know, if they're wrong and everyone else is wrong, you still keep your job.
Right.
But exactly. if you're wrong and everyone else is pointed in a different direction, then you immediately get fired. And it's almost like the same dynamic we're seeing play out at a global scale with these politicians.
If you step out and have the courage to be different, you will ultimately be the scapegoat. Everybody's going to point the finger at you. It's a massive risk. And that's the thing, you know, I think it's not just in government and politics. I think it's, you know, it's the reason why people across so many industries, again, whether we're talking about education or we're talking about medicine, et cetera, you get a couple people in power and the teachers unions, you know, that come down and say, this is the woke doctrine that we now espouse. And we want to cram this down the throats of all of these children. And you have some teachers that aren't necessarily for it, but it's a very difficult thing to step out of line because it creates an enormous amount of risk on a single individual. You know, and they know that they can get squashed for that. With politics, it's even worse because all these people are really thinking about is how do I stay in power? You know, how do I get power? How do I stay in power? I want to get elected. I want to get reelected. And so, yeah, they just sort of follow the line. They say, we're following the experts. You say, well, you're following certain experts, what is the experts, you know, that apparently have been elected by the Twitter mob. Apparently. But I mean, none of this is the way that representative democracy is supposed to work. And even somebody that's the most diehard banana fan that says, you know, all this stuff is great, we want more of this, whatever, then like, fine. But like, let the system that's supposed to work do its job. Let the Constitution prevail. Let the people go and elect the representatives who will make the laws that say this is what it's supposed to be, state by state, city by city, et cetera. Let that process work. You know, as opposed to somebody exercising extra constitutional authority that they were never awarded to, you know, in the same way, I think you could sort of as a funny example was when the CDC, the head of the CDC, who, you know, 7 months ago was a university professor, has now commandeered authority over the entire $10+ trillion U.S. housing market.
Yeah.
What does the CDC have to do with any asset class at all, let alone one of the largest asset markets in the world, and has now basically self-appointed herself queen of all U.S. housing. I mean, it's extraordinary that, like, I mean, the most tyrannical, you know, dictatorial governments. I mean, Putin's got to be looking at going, man, that's pretty messed up. I can't believe they did that. You know, and it wasn't even POTUS. It wasn't even the president. It wasn't even the Speaker of the House. It wasn't even like the higher level agency. It was just this sub agency within a small department of government that nobody ever thinks about, appointed herself the housing czar, basically, to control the entire housing market. You weren't given the authority to do that. Fauci was never given the authority to tell people how they're allowed to have sex. He was never given that authority. He was never given the authority to tell people what you have to put in your body. That is not his constitutional mandate. And so if people really feel that this is the way, whatever, then fine, but at least do it the right way. At least follow the process that's supposed to be followed and let the chips fall where they may. Obviously, I believe much more in personal freedom and the concept, again, of I think the free market is ultimately the great decider, because the free market is a real-time voting machine. The free market, as opposed to elections, which really are snapshots in time based on how we feel right now. I would argue, I think quite strongly, for example, that if a presidential election was held right now, you know, Joe Biden would be thrown out on his ass, because everybody's looking at this appalling, you know, apocalyptic, embarrassing, humiliating, shameful scenario in Afghanistan. And this guy is not popular. And I think you could run a potted plant against Joe Biden right now, and he would lose to the potted plant. Right. But, you know, what happens in 2024? What happens, you know, in another, whatever, 15 months in the midterm elections? Maybe by then people have already forgotten about this, and there'll be some new priority. There'll be some new fear. There'll be the Epsilon variant will be raging, you know, watch out for Epsilon. It's coming. Right. And so there'll be some new variant, or maybe it'll be COVID-21, right? There'll be some new thing that comes out. Now we've got a brand new super bug that everybody's got to be, you know, locked up and all these things. And that'll be the thing at that particular time. But maybe 3-4 months after that election, it'd be a whole new set of priorities. And so this is the thing with elections, is that it's these snapshots in time of whatever happens to be on people's minds, in some cases, literally that day when they go and vote. Free market capitalism is every day, real time. I go to the store, I'm making constant decisions and changes to the decisions that I make about how I spend my money. if this store pisses me off, I'm not going to go there anymore. Now I'm going to start going to this other store, or I'm going to go to this other thing. I'm going to buy this new product that comes on the market. And these constant changes in real time really are a voting machine to tell us which is superior, which is inferior. This truly is the will of the people, based on these constant daily decisions and the changes we make to our behavior. That's why it really is the superior system, even more so than I would argue sort of the traditional voting in a representative democracy, because traditional voting in a representative democracy is highly influenced, by the media, by everything. And it's a snapshot in time that, you know, then all of a sudden things change and you got to wait 2 years, 4 years, 6 years before you can make a decision. The free market changes in real time, which makes it vastly superior.
That's a very good point. That's an extremely good point, because the pushback is always, well, you know, do you trust the free market or do you trust politicians? Well, at least politicians, you know, I can vote them out of office. You know, that's the right pushback that you always get. But that's just and it's just so accurate. Very, very interesting take. On the note of, or on the kind of theme of free market capitalism, how do you think it'll play out with a potential no-fly list for the people who have not chosen to get the bananas, saying those people are not allowed to fly? Do you think the airlines will say, you know what, that's a little too much, because we're losing potentially 150 million Americans as customers? Or do you think the government could come in and subsidize them so they can go ahead and pull that off? Or how do you think that'll play out?
Anything and everything is possible. It's all on the table.
Right.
It's absolutely all on the table. So yeah, I think you could see, certain travel bans where now they say you can't even come into this city or this state. When you land at the airport, they're going to set up their own, biosecurity checkpoints and all these sorts of
things. Basically, Puerto Rican,
you got to show your papers, right? You got to show your papers.
Everyone's in a hazmat suit.
Right. You got to show your papers, all these different things. So yeah, all that stuff is possible. It's all possible. And again, even if somebody might kind of look at that and say, well, that seems like a great idea, you know, that would keep us safe, keep us protected. I would urge you to, nobody who's against bananas has ever stood up and said, I wish more people were dead. You know, I wish this pandemic had killed off more people. I wish it would get worse. Nobody believes in that. Obviously, nobody's for that. There are people that are obviously very much pro freedom, that are pro choice. So they're willing to stand behind their convictions if it means that they have to take on certain risks in life in order to sort of have a more normal life. They're willing to do that and willing to obviously allow other people, you know, you do you. If you want to live your entire life in a bubble and wear a hazmat suit everywhere you go, then that's great. That's fine, you know. And I think as well that people that feel like, okay, it's everybody needs to do this, everybody, you know, whatever, I would encourage you to consider a couple of things. Number one is how far, you know, first of all, recognize that nobody ever gave you the authority to tell somebody else how they're allowed to live their lives. Number two, how far do you think that authority extends? If you really think that you have the authority to tell somebody else what they should and shouldn't do, what else do you think you should be able to tell them? Do you think you should be able to tell them,
you know, and what should other people be able to tell you?
Right, exactly. You know, if you tell me I've got to go, I'm required to go and get a banana, why can't I tell you, you need to go to the gym? You know, you need to run 3 miles a day, you know, and I want to see your gym card. I want to see your workout plan, and I want to see your personal trainer signed off on it. In fact, you know, because otherwise, you know, you're going out and you're filling your body with crap and you're eating McDonald's and you're going to get a heart attack, and you're getting a heart attack is going to clog up the medical system.
Right.
And so shame on you for making everybody else less safe and taking up these valuable resources. So I should get to see your gym pass. I should get to see your workout records to make sure that you're getting in doing your cardio. I should be able to see that you're eating broccoli and you know, whatever, lima beans and whatever else every single day, so that you're keeping the rest of us safe. So I would encourage you to really truly ask yourself, how much authority do I have over somebody else's life? do I really think that I have the right to go and tell somebody how to live their life? And if so, how far does that extend? Do I get to tell them how they're allowed to raise their kid? Do I get to tell them, you know, whatever else, how much money they're allowed to make, how much taxes they're willing to pay? I mean, obviously, this is the thing that a lot of people now believe that they have the right to sort of dictate all these things. Mm-hmm. If somebody's making too much money in their sole discretion, then by God, we get to take that money and get to go and distribute it anywhere else we'd like. But really think through, I would encourage anybody that's sort of pro banana to think through, where does that authority end? What,
or at least pro banana mandate. That's
pro banana mandate. You know, yeah,
people accuse me of being anti-banana.
We need to keep our metaphors straight. Yeah, we need to keep our metaphors straight.
Banana. Everyone has a different risk reward.
That's right.
They need to make for themselves and their family. It's about actually the government issued mandates.
I was just having this conversation with somebody the other day. Said, I love bananas. I love the concept of bananas. I think that, you know, if I were living in anybody that was living, you know, even 100 years ago, that was transported into our time and saw this vast array of bananas that, you know, cures things that are, you know, that were formerly, you know, deadly and all this stuff. I mean, they would be like, this is amazing. They're like, right. Yeah, I agree. It's pretty incredible. And hats off, honestly, to the pharmaceutical industry. Obviously there's plenty of reason to have certain misgivings of them, but, to be able to sort of take something and engineer a banana that quickly is impressive just as a pure intellectual feat. I give them credit for that. You know, in my view, I kind of look at it and say, well, it is a brand new, you know, new species of banana that has been engineered in a laboratory. And so, you know, if somebody has some hesitation, I can certainly understand why. That seems to make sense. And for somebody to have that kind of freedom to do that. But yeah, like I was in the Army. I've had more bananas than I can possibly imagine. You know, before I got deployed and they shipped everybody off to war, they said, stick your arm out. And they went, you got a whole bunch of bananas and you didn't really have any choice. Now that I have the choice, I like to exercise my right to choose and make a informed, educated decision with, you know, the trusted medical advisors that I have in my life. And I think that's a normal thing to do. You can't buy an erectile dysfunction pill without talking to your doctor. That's what they say in all the drug commercials. Talk to your doctor to find out if such and so is right for you.
Right.
Except when it comes to this particular banana, you know, then suddenly, you know,
talk to anybody. Listen to us.
Right. Don't talk to anybody. You know, some 18-year-old kid on Twitter now is telling you what you should go and do. So again, I would encourage people to think through, what is that, you know, how far does that authority extend? And the other thing I would encourage you to think about is, what is your line, right? How many, if they keep telling you, go and get your 18th booster, now go get this shot, no, go get this shot, now this one and this one and this one and this one, now you can't do this, now I wear 5 masks, now all these, at what point are you going to go, okay, this is really getting crazy? And that's, I think, is sort of inevitable. I think anytime you have a descent into some level of tyranny, and I don't want to make this big deal and go again, oh, this is East Germany, whatever. I'm not saying that. I mean, I think this is clearly in Western civilization, this is unprecedented to see it this wide. That's just a historical fact. To see something of this level, this far spread across all of supposedly free society. But yeah, at a certain point, what is your, you know, what is your aha moment? What is your breaking point? When do you say, okay, this is really getting silly, enough is enough? Because a lot of people did that in other descents into tyranny where they thought, it's probably fine. Yeah, I'll go along with it for now. And then after a certain point, you know, you just go, Jesus, what is going on here? And you start questioning.
Yeah.
But by then, I would argue it would probably be too late.
There you go. That's right. So on that note, I mean, just for me, myself, I've been looking around the world trying to say, okay, where can I find the most freedom? And, you know, I was going down to Puerto Rico, in fact, at the beginning of this year to put in my 6 months, you know, and I was down there for, this was probably in maybe February, March. And I was down there for a day and I couldn't take it. I'm like, there's no way. You know, I went downtown San Juan, you got the police on every single corner, making sure that you're wearing a mask, and you got the curfew where you can't go outside. I think it was past 10 o'clock at night. I'm like, I'm out of here. You know, so I went to Florida. until my event there. But now I'm back in Arizona. I've got a lease on this place until I think December, January. But the world is so volatile right now, and everything is up in the air. Everyone asks me, you know, where should I go? Where should I go to have the most amount of freedom? And I'm like, I don't know. I don't know, because I don't know what the world's going to look like in 6 months. I don't even know what it's going to look like in a month. So I know this is your profession. This is your business. So where the hell can people go right now to have some liberty and freedom?
Yeah. So I agree with you. I think everything's changing so quickly. Here in Puerto Rico, they have banana mandates now.
Yeah.
They just made a banana mandate. Like I said, that's why, but you know, there's some provisions in there, which is why my friends and I are going to patronize the restaurants and establishments that have rejected that.
Yeah. My concern is just if they start there, it's just a matter of time before they just make, you know, keep going and going and going.
And not a lot of time at that. It's a matter of time, but not very much.
Yeah.
Yeah. The reality is that, I think, so every situation is different, and there are going to be the answer that you don't want to hear is that there is no perfect place.
Right.
There's no place that somebody's, you know, you've got this wish list of the 10 things that are important to you, and you're going to get 10 out of 10. Mm-hmm. I mean, unless your wish list is, I don't want to have any freedom. I want people to scream at me all the time about stuff. You know, there's
then the world is your oyster.
Right. Exactly. You're in luck. You know, but if you think, you know what, I just want to dial it back and sort of live my life. I want to go back to 2019 where, you know, I was irritated by certain things, but by comparison now, it just seems like what a paradise that was. You know, and here are the things that are really most important to me. I want my, you know, I want to have, you know, whatever, COVID freedom. I want my kids to go to a normal school, or they're going to be taught normal, you know, real math and science and, you know, and not this woke doctrine. I want to be somewhere where it's safe and I don't have to, whatever, step over heroin needles and human feces when I walk out in the streets, and all these different things that everybody's going to have their wish list, right? You're not probably going to find every single one, and you're going to have to make compromises. That's the deal. You're just going to have to make compromises. I went to Mexico to have my daughter, because I didn't want, for me at that, for that period in time, the only thing that mattered to me was COVID flexibility. I didn't give a shit about anything else. And to be honest, my experience in Mexico was fantastic. It was really great. I was in Cancun. It was wonderful. COVID did not factor into my life at all. And that was the most important thing for me, because you know, the medical care was great. I mean, obviously that was non-negotiable, but I knew that going into it, it was really exceptional, but I wanted to make sure that it wasn't going to be an issue, that they weren't going to have some silly change. And then to say, dad can't be in the delivery room or whatever, just something, or like, you know, mom's got to wear a mask while she's in labor because we're afraid of, you know, any of that sort of stuff. I was like, I am not going to tolerate any of this. And so that was the place that we knew we were going to have. We had everything arranged with the doctors. It was like, if they make a change, just want to make sure we're on the same page. Like, yeah, we're cool. It's fine. And so Mexico was great because that was the priority for me at the time. And I think there are places everywhere, honestly, and everybody's got to, you know, think very deliberately and methodically about the priorities, the things in your life that are most important, your kids, your, you know, just whatever, sanity, conflict, all these different things, and think through what's really important to you. That's number one. Number two is you have to think globally while simultaneously very locally. And what I mean by that is you've got to consider the entire world in your universe of options, but don't look at it as sort of big political entities like, you know, Mexico or, you know, the US or, you know, whatever, Montana or something like that, because every neighborhood, every town, every county, municipality is going to be different. And you might find that your world changes entirely just by moving across the county line, you know, or by moving two cities over or something like that. Where I was, Mexico is a great example, because I was in Cancun, which is in the Mexican state of Quintana Roo. And every place in Mexico had its own. They had this traffic light system. You were red or yellow. They came up with a fourth traffic light. I don't remember what the hell it was, but it didn't matter because it didn't factor into my life. It didn't matter. They would say, oh, we're changing the color, and people go, oh, whatever. But it was different depending on where you were in Mexico. So if you went to certain neighborhoods in Mexico City, it was a certain way. If you went to a different state, like Quintana Roo, it was a certain way. And even within Quintana Roo, it was different depending on where you were. Cancun was very interesting because they recognized very quickly, you know, we're going to go broke. Like, we don't have the luxury that the United States has, where they just get to print money and go into debt and all these things. You know, they actually have to work. And they knew they had this cash cow. They said, well, there's all these American tourists coming down here to Cancun because it's a free place and we can't mess that up. So they kept everything open, you know. But if you went down the road somewhere else, you know, they were tightening things up, whatever. So local matters a whole lot. And I think that's definitely worth very strong consideration, even in places that are, you know, let's say more relatively free, like Florida. Depending on where you go in Florida, there's going to be, you know, it's just really all about who you're surrounding yourself with.
That was my exact experience in Florida. You know, when I was there, let's see, again, this was probably February, March of this year. The first thing I did is go on my phone. I tried to research which place had gotten rid of the mask mandates the longest, like which counties, which areas, because I figured those would be the places that would have the most freedom. And so I ended up going to the west coast of Florida, and I got down to Naples. And I don't know if you've been there, but it was fantastic. I mean, it was just like going back to 2019, but then I had my event. So I had to go to Miami and do some research there. And it was basically California.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Your life, even in Florida, is going to be completely different depending on which side of Alligator Alley you're on.
You know? Yeah.
So if you're in downtown Miami versus, you know, yeah, Naples or Ocala or something like that. Yeah. I had a friend, I have a good friend, Francisco from Southwest Florida, who came to visit me actually in Mexico after my daughter was born. He was telling me about it. He's like, yeah, it was just, it's not a really big deal where I live, and it never really has been. And that's cool. But yeah, you drive 2 hours across the swamp and it's totally different. Yeah. And a lot of things, by the way, that it's not just COVID, it's a lot of things that are going to be totally different. You know, I mean, even last, you know, a lot of the peaceful protests from last summer, you know, they were really different depending on, you know, where specifically you might have been. So, yeah, I think local matters a whole lot, but definitely start by expanding your thinking to the entire world. And when you think about it like that, you've got there's a lot of options. And if you sort of match that up with a real honest, deliberate list of priorities, you're going to find several answers. You really will. And if you have the flexibility to stay at least a little bit mobile, you're going to have an easier time. But, you know, I think as well, nobody can live their lives constantly trying to move around from place to place. Mm-hmm. And that's why I think ultimately what I hope is that, you know, people that get it, people that really understand will eventually sort of migrate together. And, you know, that helps create a lot more power, you know, that strength in numbers. I think we'll eventually see that. Frankly, that's where I think this goes, is when you'll start seeing, and then we'll find out how well the market really works. Because you'll see all these places that are all these other places that are locked down and fearful and panicked, and other places that, you know, are local economies, they're booming because everybody's just out living their lives. You know, and again, in all things, it's the way that they decide they want to raise their children and the things that they want to put in schools, and travel, and the businesses that are running, all these things. So that's what I hope for. I hope that eventually people that are kind of like mind about these things will eventually congregate together, hopefully in a warm and pretty place.
Yeah. I had the opportunity to hang out with Gerald Celente this week, or last week, excuse me. Max Kaiser was here in Phoenix doing like a Bitcoin meetup thing. And I don't know why Gerald was there, but he was there, and I've interviewed him a couple of times. And so we had a long conversation about what's been happening here. And we were talking about things that we could do to push back and stand up for liberty and freedom. And he asked me if I knew the story of how the Berlin Wall came down. And I said, a little bit, but yeah, just go. I'd love to hear it from your standpoint. And he said, well, basically what happened is a bunch of people went out to the wall because they had had enough and they wouldn't leave. And they said, shoot me. I don't care. I've had enough. And all the other people saw that. So they start leaving their homes. And then, before you know it, you've got thousands of people per every one soldier with a gun. And the soldiers look around and say, you know what, if we shoot one person here, we are done. And they said, we got to put our guns down. And the wall came down. And he said, that's what we have to do. That's the way you win this, figuratively speaking, this war, is people have to stand up as a group and say that we're not going to take it anymore. And whether that's, patronizing one restaurant over the other one, maybe it's standing up and just, peacefully protesting. That's what we have to do to push back. Because if we don't, we see the direction that this is going. And to your point, going very, very quickly. People that say that I'm, worried about this or overly worried about this, I always point to 2019. And if I said, listen, if I would have told you in 2019 that the government would lock you in a cage, that they'd force you to shut down your business, that they wouldn't allow you to go to the beach, you'd have told me that I was absolutely insane. But sure enough, 3 months later, here we are, right? And so if we got to this point that fast, just think how fat or where we could be in a year from now if we don't stand up for freedom.
Exactly right. Exactly right. Yeah. And like I said, I think it starts with everybody is an individual first. And if you're not even willing to take the most basic things and go, you know what, I'm going to do something else with my money. I'm going to put my money where my mouth is. Or if you're not even willing to do that, in many respects, you have no right to even complain.
Yeah. I know we're getting short on time here, but lastly, and this is the pushback that I get on Twitter and social media so much when I talk about these things, but I'd like to hear it from your standpoint, again, because you're such a student of history and looking at this through the lens of history. If you had to give a quick elevator pitch to someone on why freedom is more important than security, or why it should be prioritized over security, what would you tell them?
I think if you go back and you look at the history of empire, literally across all of human history, going back to, you can go back to the ancient Sumeria, and you look at the fall of empire, there are only a handful of reasons for it. Very, very few reasons for it. Occasionally you'll find an instant disaster, whatever, major earthquake or something like that. But for the most part, what we find is that major civilizations, great powers tend to fall because of an erosion of freedom. Hmm. It's not because of security. It's not because of any of these other things. It's because of an erosion of freedom, because they make it more difficult for people to live their lives. They make it more difficult for people to be productive. They make it more difficult for people to save. It's economic freedom. It's individual liberty, all these things. This is ultimately what causes the decline of empire. We can see this over and over and over again. Again, it's not always the case. Sometimes you've got, what I call single person empires, the Mongolians under Genghis, the Macedonians under Alexander, et cetera. You've got the one leader that dies and within a generation or two, it's kaput. But for the most part, and we can see this, the French, the Ottomans, the Romans, there's so many examples of this, that the great powers fall because of an erosion of freedom. And so be careful what you ask for. That's the lesson. That is one of the most fundamental lessons of history. Be careful what you ask for.
Yeah, there you go. All right, Simon, thank you very much for your time. Awesome conversation as always. For my viewers and listeners who want to find out more about what you do, where can they go and where can they sign up for that awesome email list? I'm on that email list. I know Kenny's on, Kenny McElroy, and everybody loves it. So where can they do that?
It's just sovereignman.com.
Awesome. Mm-hmm. All right. Thanks again for your time. Can't wait to have another conversation, my friend.
All right, buddy.
Hi, guys. I'd like to invite each and every one of you to the next Rebel Capitalist Live event. If you are a fan of the Rebel Capitalist show, I guarantee you, you will love the live event. The next one is Houston, where you can meet and listen to speakers, all your favorites from the Rebel Capitalist show. People such as Dr. Ron Paul, Chris Cole, Lynn Alden, Luke Groman, just to name a few. If you want to check out the rest of the speaker list and find out how you can attend, we'll put a link in the description below, or you can just go to rebelcapitalistlive.com. This is an event where you can learn to build wealth and thrive in a world of out-of-control central banks and big governments. But it's not just about building wealth. It's about increasing your freedom and networking with like-minded individuals, fellow rebel capitalists. It's an amazing event. I know you'll absolutely love it. Check out rebelcapitalistlive.com, and I will see you in Houston.
Thank you for listening to the Rebel Capitalist Show. For more content like this, check out the Rebel Capitalist blog at georgegammon.com or go to the George Gammon YouTube channel.